Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
No, it is because we must work on the electric engine because the bureaucrats in Brussels have told us we must do this.
Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. On this week's show, we're talking about what the cuts to the EV tax credit mean for Slate's ultra-cheap electric truck. Rivian's CEO RJ Scaringe has some stern words for the legacy auto industry. And as more people look at cheap used EVs for a good deal, does mileage even matter? But first, how are you, Patrick? How was your fourth?
Tim, I'm good. I took a couple needed days off around the holiday. As you can see, we're back to doing this in my kitchen because my upstairs is too hot right now, and we've cooked the plant. So bear with me if you see my dog strolling around and my partner moving about and such. So yeah, we're making it work here in upstate New York. How about you, man? How was your time off?
It was good. It was good. I still have all my fingers. Which
nice.
Is important for a July 4th. How about you?
You never know, man. You never know.
Yeah. No, it was good. I ate some hot dogs. I played in a kickball game, which is like surprisingly hard as a near 30-year-old. kind of embarrassing, but we made it work. Yeah.
Super exciting. Well, I give it about 10 years too. And then, you know, it only gets considerably worse. I was in a good mood though over the 4th because I had a Porsche Taycan all weekend. I had a Taycan Cross Turismo 4S, which is like the medium grade Taycan. So it only has about 600 horsepower. And that was a delight. It's such a great EV. It charges like crazy fast. Like I went, I think from 15% to 70% in 12 minutes on that thing. And also it's so powerful that it makes you drive like a really bad person. You know, like whatever you think your morality is, get in a car like that and you will see your respect for the law and traffic codes and everybody else on the road just completely go out the window. So that was rad. You've driven one of those too, haven't you?
I love that car. A lot of the time, I mean, it's probably the question you get a lot too, is like people hear what you do and they're like, oh, what's your favorite car? What would you buy? And for me, a lot of the time, the answer is Porsche Taycan,
Porsche
Cross
Taycan.
Turismo.
Yeah.
But specifically the Cross Turismo, because this is like the kind of like the wagon hatchback sort of version. Not that it has like one cubic foot more cargo space or something ridiculous. It's like barely a wagon, but it looks awesome. And it's ridiculously powerful, even in the like the low key, quote unquote, versions, right?
Yeah, it is. It was a delight. You had the Turbo S, right? That's one you drove once, which has, I think, approximately like a billion horsepower, right?
Yeah. And that was like early kind of in my time testing EVs. It was like, it's ridiculous. I mean, there are some where you hit the accelerator and it just feels kind of like warp speed. You just feel like you're going into like a different dimension. And the Turbo S Taycan is a lot like that.
Yeah, that happens in that car. You hit the launch mode button, you know, and you end up in an alternate dimension where like a race of like superpowered dinosaurs rules the earth and you have to like liberate a bunch of human slaves from them to get back to your home time.
Has this ever happened to you?
Yeah, a couple times in the car. It's a pain in the ass. I mean, it takes days. I mean, it's not even worth doing, but it's that fast. It like alters the fabric of reality,
okay.
Which is probably why like the one that I had, which is the mid-grade Taycan, was $165,000, including $40,000 in options alone. So yeah, I think it's the best EV you can buy if you have the money, and you will need a lot of money to own one.
Yeah, I guess I'll put it to you. Is that the one money no object? Is that your EV?
I don't know if I could ever spend that much money on myself on anything, but I guess if I had to, then probably, Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a near perfect car. I was like, it did everything great. The range was great. I was getting like 320 miles of range. It's so fast. It does the dimension hopping thing I mentioned. It charges fast. It did everything. I was like, I don't know what more you'd ever want from a vehicle. It doesn't fly yet, but like beyond that, you know, it's pretty stacked, you know?
It has room for two Kingsleys in back.
Yeah, no, he loved it. He told me he was thrilled. He was thrilled. My Pomeranian just like, yeah, he was amped to be in the back of that thing. Well, I think like now's a good place to switch gears, as we've talked about like the upper stratosphere of EVs. And now we're going to talk about a car that's at the opposite end of the spectrum. And that would be the Slate truck. What's going on with the Slate truck, Tim?
Yeah, all right. Let's kick this off with a very brief recap of something you've probably all heard already. President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill has been signed into law. And that means, among other things, that the $7,500 new EV tax credit and the $4,000 used EV tax credit are both ending after September 30th.
Yeah, this is us saying that if you've been thinking about buying a new or used EV, get off your ass and do it soon. We're going to have more to say on this episode. But, you know, if there's a good deal to be had out there, it's not going to last very long. So, you know, get on it before the credits go bust.
Yeah, and we'll be unpacking the loss of these EV tax credits and what it means for all corners of this industry for a while, but we wanted to focus on one potentially high-profile casualty that's already happening, which is Slate Auto. This is the Jeff Bezos-backed EV startup that came out of stealth a couple months ago. It's promising a super cheap, bare-bones electric pickup truck with a sub-$20,000 price tag. The important thing is that sub-$20,000 price tag was dependent on federal incentives remaining in place. So the day that this law passed, the company removed mention of the under $20,000 price tag from its website. That was something TechCrunch reported first. And now it's advertising a price in the mid-20s, which is basically what we've assumed the starting price would be all along, you know, without the credits, right? The actual MSRP was going to be somewhere in the mid-20s range.
So what do you think this means for Slate exactly, Tim, and that truck's competitiveness?
Yeah, I've talked to some analysts on this, and I think it definitely does change the landscape for this company, right? One of the kind of biggest claims, like the headline claim from Slate was this under $20,000 price. That's super cheap for any car, right? You don't get really any new cars, period, coming out at that price, especially no new EVs. And now it's going to be thousands of dollars more expensive, right? Like we don't know exactly how much it's going to cost yet, but you're talking about thousands of dollars more for a car, for a truck that is still extremely basic, right? 150 miles of range, a plastic gray interior, two seats, two doors, no speakers, no radio, no infotainment system. And if you're talking about a price that's like, you know, we can assume it's going to be mid-20s, maybe that means 26, 27. That's really close to the Ford Maverick, which is the only other compact pickup truck you can buy in America.
Yeah.
And unlike the Slate, the Maverick, like that base Maverick isn't probably like amazing. It's going to be a low grade, you know, trim. But it has four doors, it has seating for five, it has a screen, it has a stereo, it has all this stuff that the Slate just won't have at that, you know, mid-20s price point.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting also that they're going to build the Slate truck at a factory in Indiana, and the batteries for it are also sourced from the United States. They are U.S.-made NMC cells from the South Korean company SK On, and South Koreans SK On and LG make a ton of EV batteries in this country, and for EVs for this country. I bring this up to say that like the Slate truck feels like it was really designed to work with the tax credit as it used to exist,
right,
or as it's going away soon, right? Like it's made here. The batteries are made here. It's like we've done everything you've asked us to do to make a car that's this dirt cheap, and that's all going out the window now. So that's it's really kind of a bummer. And we were kind of talking about this earlier, you and I, about like the wisdom of building car strategy around regulations when like regulations and rules in America change very quickly now. And like we've had a couple times where like one for a lot of different policies, right? Not just cars, but like one administration comes in and just totally does a complete 180 reversal from what the past administration does. So what is Slate Auto saying about all this stuff so far?
Nothing so far from Slate, which is, I think, a little surprising given that, yeah, like they have been advertising this federal, you know, federally subsidized price for so long. Nothing from them yet. Hopefully more in the future. To your point, like it's one of the really, I think, underreported kind of consequences of this policy shift is like EV tax credits aren't just EV tax credits. They're not just for making the price lower, right? They have all these strings attached. You have to have your batteries come from certain place, ideally North America, the US and its allies. And partially for that reason, Slate chose to make their batteries here or to get their batteries from the US. And now looking forward, it's like, okay, the next Slate that opens up shop in a couple of years, like, is it going to have its batteries made in the US? Is it going to have them made in China? Is it going to have them made in South Korea?
Yeah.
There's not as much of an incentive to have them made here.
No, it's kind of a shame, right? Because this would have meant, I say would have, but like this will hopefully still mean a lot of American jobs and a lot of like cars produced in America and a lot of batteries produced in America and like jobs around that too, which are all things the president says that he wants. So, if this does just kind of turn out to be DOA, or if the final price is just untenable, like that's a real loss here. I mean, is that kind of the extreme case though, right? Do you think this is the nail in the coffin for this company before it ever really gets started?
I don't. I think it definitely makes things harder. It makes it harder for Slate to scale up and get profitable, which is the big challenge with EVs in general, right? It's not just Slate that's struggling, or it's not just Slate that is dealing with the challenge of building up scale in EV manufacturing, eventually lowering the price, lowering the cost. That's what basically every EV maker besides Tesla is still working on right now. Now you're talking about without the EV tax credit, they won't be able to sell as many. They may even have to lower that starting price, make less money on each one. And yeah, it's a challenge for scaling up this business. But I think the important thing is, like, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the cheapest EVs in America are not cheap at all.
No, not really. No.
And so even if Slate comes into this market in the mid-20s, you know, maybe the that SUV add-on kit will end up being somewhere like 30, 35 grand. That's the one people are really going to want. That still is at the low end of a market that is really dominated by luxury offerings. Like, I think there's a lot of opportunity for basically any company that can come into the EV space, put something out that's 25, 30, 35 grand, that's really appealing, like that could work out really well for Slate.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, or if the rules change, it could work out just fine for BYD or Xiaomi or NIO or XPeng or one of those companies. I'm just throwing that out there. It's like, I feel like that outcome is inevitable. So it's like policy wise, like we better get on top of this before China does, because like it's not hard to see where this goes if we don't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for Slate, like the big question that I think they'll need to answer is, where does this SUV land price wise, right? We've been talking mostly, and they've been talking mostly about the entry level, the blank Slate. That's the basic truck, two doors, two seats, the lowest priced option. They also offer this SUV add-on kit. that will add on a roof and some more seats and some airbags and a roll bar and basically turn this into a two-door SUV. They also offer, they're also going to offer a bigger battery that is going to up the range to like 240 miles. So my assumption is almost everybody is going to want that, right? Almost everybody's going to want the SUV and the bigger battery. The question is, where does that combination land? And how does that compete with something like a Chevy Equinox EV or a Hyundai Ioniq 5, you know? That's going to be, I think, the real test for this company. Not a lot of people, I don't think, are want that super base level one anyway. The question is, how much does it cost when it has all the accessories that people want? The stereo, you know, the better interior, the leather, all that stuff.
Sure got hard to make an affordable car in America, or even for Americans too. Like, it's just kind of crazy how expensive everything's gotten across the board. So electric or otherwise, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And all this policy stuff like doesn't help. And I think the last thing I'd say on Slate is like the other reason that I don't necessarily think this is nail in the coffin type stuff for this company is just that it's super unique, right? Like, there was a lot of excitement. There remains a lot of excitement around what this company is trying to do, which is like selling a car that's finally super basic. A lot of people were really excited about like manual windows, no screen, no overly complicated stuff, and only paying for what you want. And so I think for that reason, like it remains to be seen how much people are willing to pay for that, right? Maybe they're willing to pay in the mid-20s for a car that's like super basic and super, you know, customizable that changes with your life over time. So it's kind of an untested type of product. So it's hard to say like exactly what price it should come in at.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Yeah, it's a weird moment for the EV race right now, with a lot less of the Biden era optimism that marked the field back in 2023 and even last year. It's worth noting too that, you know, globally EV sales are up, hybrids are taking off pretty much everywhere, including in America. So we very much feel like electrification is clearly the future of just, you know, reducing gas use and performance. But on to our next item. One high-profile startup CEO thinks that traditional car companies aren't just dragging their feet on the future. They're actively trying to slow it down. In an interview with Inside EVs and other media outlets recently, Rivian CEO RJ Scaringe had some tough words for the legacy car companies. And he said they just want this EV thing to go away.
Yeah. Here's what RJ told our deputy editor, Mac Hogan. This is all in quotes. All of the incumbents, they are the biggest adversaries in any of the EV policies. All of the work that we're trying to do to even get it just to be a fair game on things like vehicle registration costs, the folks we spend the most energy on fighting against in DC are actually car companies. And so that's very, very telling, because it's reflective of their desire, which is that this whole EV thing would just go away.
Wow. I was also kind of hoping that you would put on like the Clark Kent glasses like RJ has and read those just for effect, which, sorry, I didn't think of that earlier, because I think you kind of look like it. If you put the glasses on, you guys could look like Pastor Brothers or something.
He's got some weight on me. He's a big dude.
He's a big dude. Yeah. So's Elon. Elon's like 6'4", something like that. I guess to be like an EV startup founder, you have to be like super tall and jacked.
I don't think he's 6'4". And also, yeah. I wish we could get through 20 minutes of the Plugged In podcast without bringing up Elon Musk for no apparent reason. But go ahead.
I'm trying to think if was he on the docket for the rest of the day, or did he get in anyway? Well, damn.
I think we could have had an Elon-free episode.
Almost. Yeah. Oh, man. Sorry, everyone. I will say, to go back to RJ, obviously, I there was a reason that when Mac heard this, like, he wanted to turn this into like RJ's comments about this matter into a standalone story, which you could read on InsideEVs.com. This is a rare moment of candor for any automotive CEO. Like, this is a very tightly controlled world in terms of messaging, and they don't often drop bombs like this. I mean, the guy we were just talking about does, but thankfully not everybody operates like he does. And occasionally, Ford CEO Jim Farley, he's been very forthright about the challenges facing his company and the industry. I think he's more candid than most, but he, like, RJ's throwing some real punches with this one. And I find him to be very smart and very measured generally. Like I wouldn't describe RJ Scrin just as a habitual bomb thrower. Like, he's got some good quotes, he's got some takes, but he's pretty careful. You've interviewed him before. I have not. What did you think of what he had to say here?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I do think he comes off as a very, in the world of like auto executives, comes off like pretty honest and pretty genuine. And I think he's generally mostly speaking his mind.
And passionate too. I think he's a person that comes off, he like really loves what Rivian does and like really just truly believes in that company as a defender of it, which I think you've got to be, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think what he's saying makes perfect sense. Like, of course they want it to go away. Or at least they don't want it to move quickly, right? EVs are a tough business. They're all trying to scale up. None of them are making money at it except for Tesla.
Yeah.
And things would be a lot easier for them if they could just keep selling, F-150s and Silverados,
yeah,
and nobody was breathing down their necks and telling them to sell EVs, or there was no Tesla and no Rivian, putting the kind of screws on them from a competition point of view. Of course, they would rather just do what they're doing.
Yeah, and let's be clear about what RJ's talking about here. He means a lot of like the entrenched things that help establish car companies, like dealership franchise laws, which require all new cars to be sold through dealers. Tesla was the first one in modern times to be like, yeah, no, screw that. And most EV startups have followed that. Rivian doesn't do dealers either. It doesn't want to ever. Or how car companies were pushing back through lobbying in D.C. on the emissions rules that were getting tougher and tougher and going to force them to build more EVs. Like, even ones like Toyota, which makes, everything's a hybrid now, or General Motors, which is getting really serious about the EV space. Behind the scenes, like in Washington, they were pushing to make sure that those like all electric rules like don't happen or don't happen to them right away. So like, that's what he's talking about here. It's like you're... And I'm just going to go ahead and assume that like Rivian does not have like the lobbying horsepower that General Motors and Toyota do. So that's what that's what they're up against.
I mean, if they did, we would probably still have an EV tax credit, So
yeah, I mean the whole auto industry got outgunned by big oil on this last one is my theory,
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. But yeah, RJ's getting to the heart of the problem or the challenge that's facing these traditional car companies, which is they still make all of their profits selling gas-powered cars and trucks.
Yeah.
The only EV makers that actually make money doing this are Tesla and some of the companies in China. Ford, GM, all these companies. Ford, you can see it especially because they made this probably mistake of a couple of years ago. They decided to break the business out into the EV and the combustion division. And so you can just see exactly how much money they continue to lose on EVs as they're trying to scale this up and they're trying to bring down battery costs. Rivian is making progress here. They've had some gross profits. So basically, not company-wide, but they figured out how to make the R1 vehicles for a little bit less money.
Yeah, that's right.
How to make them profitably. What am I trying to say here?
Like, no, I know what you mean. It's like tricky accounting. Like gross. It's like plus or minus a few things. Like it's on the path to being profitable, and they've had profitable quarters. So it's not just like lighting money on fire all the time at Rivian, but also, you know,
they've figured out on the individual vehicle level, they can now make an R1 for less money than they sell it for. But the business as a whole has not achieved profitability yet.
There you go. Yeah. No, it has not had like an annual profit yet. And they're aiming for a profitable year in 2025, but that would be their first. And then you got to keep that going for a while. So yeah, if you look at this from a purely capitalistic point of view, like I think it's one thing for an investor-backed startup where there's lots of hopes for the future, it's kind of acceptable for that to burn cash until it hopefully gets profitable, like almost every startup ever does, including Tesla. It's another thing entirely for like a big publicly traded company that's like 100 years old and has 100 years of like investor expectations, like Ford or General Motors, to just keep lighting money on fire until like battery costs go down and it, you know, makes profit at scale, which is, that's kind of the problem here. It's mostly a battery problem, and it's a very costly endeavor. And if you're used to GM printing money from truck profits, you may not have the stomach for it to, not be printing money right away with battery powered cars.
Yeah. And they, you know, I mean, like we've talked about it before, but like as much as we would like, or as much as it would probably be better for the world, for the climate, if these companies just like recognized that EVs were the future and just like pivoted whole hog to that, that's just not how this works. That's not how the corporate world works. Like they are beholden to shareholders, and they are gonna prioritize what makes the shareholders money in the short term over, you know, these long term goals. Of course, they want to delay this as long as they can and keep making money on the thing that they've been doing forever.
They know how to do. Yeah.
Right. And I do bet that it varies. I don't think that is necessarily every car company that is like just totally rejecting this. You look at a company like Hyundai, EVs have kind of been the rebirth of this company.
Yeah.
Like they have really
best cars they've ever made by far.
Yeah, they have really made a name for themselves in this kind of modern era by making really awesome EVs, like the Ioniq 5, the Ioniq 9, you know, the Kias. Then you look at a company like Toyota, and they have not done that. They have been dragged into this, kicking and screaming. They've been doing a lot of lobbying against, EV stuff, against EV policies. And so I bet there is a spectrum here.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting in all the interviews that I do and you do with all these people, these different companies, it kind of like the willingness to go electric and to embrace like what's seen as an electric future, it kind of varies from the C-suites on down. Like we hear from CEOs who were like, this is the future and it's going to be bumpy, but we got to make it happen. There are certain executives who are much more skeptical and are happy to kind of let this sort of moment of a speed bump happen so that they can back off a bit. We've talked to like engineers who are really into this stuff, or marketing people who really aren't into this stuff, and salespeople who aren't into this stuff, and others who are. So it's not always a unified front. And my mind goes back to a time when I was having a conversation at dinner with a certain German automaker that shall not be mentioned here. The dinner was off the record. And I said, you know, I think we're getting to the limit of what gas-powered cars can do. Because when you look at the plateau of or the trajectory, right, of gas car performance in my lifetime, like from the 80s till like the last 10 years, it was just upward. And it was like they were at like 600, 700 horsepower gas-powered cars, and now it's kind of leveled off a bit. I was like, I think we're getting to the end of what we can do. And one of these German engineers goes, no, it is because we must work on the electric engine because the bureaucrats in Brussels have told us we must do this. And so, like, that's one example of many. And, like, the implication of that, like, the mask kind of came off of that person for a second. It was like, we don't really want to do this, but we're doing it because we think we have to because of environmental regulations. And I think that's proof to me that like the auto industry is an entrenched one, as we like to say. People have to buy cars to get around. So, you know, these car companies are kind of used to being complacent and just living off of incremental change and getting better and better in small ways than your competition. Like a big win is when you have slightly cheaper window switches than Nissan does. It's not really built for like big disruptions like this and like total shifts in what you do to run on batteries and software and being forced to be innovative. And I sometimes think like just in my lifetime, like what was the most innovative car, the most game-changing car until like EVs came out? And it was probably the Toyota Prius. And there, right, I mean, right, like there wasn't a ton else that was just like a complete, like top to bottom game changer in automobiles until recently, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting because it brings me back to, you know, the early 2020s, maybe the late teens, when it was really cool to be all in on EVs. Like we saw this just like parade of announcements. You know, Tesla was going from being like a real niche player to this big deal. Its stock was going absolutely through the roof. And you saw all these car companies decide that they were going to be going all electric by 2030 or by 2035, or they were going to launch, you know, all these new models. And because it was like the hype, it was a hype cycle, right? It was the thing that was cool to do at the time. And you've seen them very quickly change their tune on this as it's become less cool. As it turned out that it is actually going to be really hard to do this, that it's not just like, oh, you copy Tesla and you like make a car, you make a car that runs on batteries and boom, you're like printing money. It has become a lot less palatable for these companies and they're fighting it.
Yeah. It turns out what Tesla did was a hell of a lot harder than anyone gave them credit for. I think, including journalists at the time, like I'll readily cop to that today. So, RJ also sees this as kind of an opportunity for Rivian too, this situation, right?
Right. So he says that people don't have great choices for decently priced EVs. And he thinks that could play into the R2's hands when it launches, as that car is supposed to be $45,000. This is Rivian's upcoming mainstream crossover that comes after the higher priced R1S and R1T. So this is what he said. He said, today, under $50,000, there may be two great choices with the Tesla Model Y and Model 3. This massive market share that they have is not a reflection of a healthy market. It's a reflection of a market without choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think it couldn't be a better situation for R2 to be launching into.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Patrick?
Give people a good choice at a good price, and it's just, it has a whole market to itself. I do agree with that. I agree with everything he said here. And I think when you talk about pricing, it's like there's maybe a few other decent choices, like under 50 grand, like the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and some of the other Kias and stuff. Or like, you know, a decently equipped Equinox EV. But below that, things get really iffy. Like, so it's you do not have a lot of great choices here.
Yeah. Yeah. I take a little bit of issue with his like no other great choices besides the Teslas. But I think in general, he's right. And I think there will be a big opening for Rivian there with the R2, you know, especially when you look at there are a lot of car companies out there, non-pure play EV companies that are pulling back instead of moving forward, right? You have Honda reportedly pulling the plug on its big electric SUV, Nissan delaying EVs, Toyota is shifting around its plans. Like, I'm sure we're going to see even more of that in the coming months as the kind of post-EV tax credit, post sort of Biden policy landscape sets in. And these car companies are like, okay, how many of these do I actually have to sell? How many people are actually going to buy them? I think we're probably going to continue to see these kinds of announcements.
I think that, by the way, the Nissan one is the one that cracks me up the most, is they were like, we were totally going to do all this stuff and now we're not. It's like, sure, man. Yeah. With all the money and, you know, product initiatives that you have and everything. So anyway, bless their hearts.
I too have canceled my upcoming EV.
Yeah, yeah, that you were going to make in, you know.
That I was totally working on. And it was going to be sick, too.
Yeah, you're going to make it in your backyard in volume. It was going to just make trillions of dollars. But no, this is why, last thing I want to talk about today, I'm convinced used EVs are the bargain right now. And I want to close this out by talking about car shopping, because it's something that a lot of folks will be doing soon before the tax credits dry up on September 30th. Full disclosure, I might be one of those people. I have a Kia EV6 right now that I'm leasing, and I also have a gas-powered Mazda 3, which is a great car that I don't really have any business getting rid of, but I would love to break up with gas for good. Now I'm like, well, if I'm going to do it, I may as well try and do it like now while I can. Because the best deals in the used car space are electric vehicles. The average 3-year-old used car in America is now around $30,000, which is stupid. But you can find EVs for way cheaper than that, like in the $20,000 range. I found tons of like recent off-lease Hyundais and Kias, Ford Mustang Mach-Es even. Chevy Bolts for way less than that. If you could, you can do a little bit less range. That continues to be a spectacular deal. And Tesla Model 3s like all day long. Like, we won't get into the thing about the guy, but like if you want a deal, like that's a hell of a lot of car right now for Toyota Corolla money. So it's worth checking out.
Right, but some of these, the cheapest ones, are going to be higher mileage used cars. Right. What's your theory on this?
I do have a theory on this, Tim, but like many of my good ideas, it actually came from Mac Hogan, who I should have just had do this episode today, because he's like 2 out of 3 for stories he's done that we're talking about. But he's been covering this one topic all year that's really clicked in my mind recently. And it's like, how much does high mileage matter if you have an electric vehicle? One story that he wrote looked at a Tesla Model 3 with 225,000 miles on the odometer versus one with 18,000 miles. So like a very, very worn, very driven car versus one that's, by modern standards, basically a new car. Do you want to guess
like the difference? Kind of like a Patrick George versus a Tim Levin sort of deal.
That is so hurtful. That is so hurtful and was unwarranted. And I'm not even mad. I'm just sad. But yeah. Season, Tim, you know, and also like my hair wasn't always this gray. You stick around in digital media long enough and comes for us all. But anyway, what do you think is the difference in efficiency between the Tesla that's got 225,000 miles and the one with 18,000 miles?
It has to be a huge difference. It must be a gigantic difference.
I think you know the answer already, but for the sake of podcast conversation, Tim, there's barely any difference at all. The lower mileage Tesla returned 4.55 miles per kilowatt hour, which is what we use to measure efficiency, like basically electric miles per gallon, more or less. That was 4.55 on the low mileage Tesla and 4.51 on the high mileage Tesla. That's a meaningless-ish difference in like how much daily range these two cars are going to get, which is crazy.
Yeah, I read this and I was really surprised by that result. Like basically no difference between a super high mileage and a super low mileage car when it comes to efficiency. And that is not the case for gas-powered cars. They get less efficient, they get less powerful, they return worse gas mileage over time as things just wear out.
And this is a question that we get all of the time. Like, I think you were mentioning this earlier today. Like, you hear it all the time from other people. I know. Mm-hmm. I do too. It's like, what about the EV battery? What if the battery wears out? Well, with modern EV batteries, we are just seeing more and more, like countless studies. It's just not an issue. I think battery power loss and battery degradation, as we call it, was more of an issue on older cars. But the newer ones with modern chemistry, the way they're built, they can really go the distance without seeing these huge declines in range and performance when the miles pile up.
Yeah, it's really encouraging. And one study that we covered came from RSEV, which is a used EV dealer in the UK, and it analyzed a bunch of cars that were coming off lease. They looked at 300 cars, and on average, they retained 90% of their battery capacity after 90,000 miles. Most were at 85% capacity at 150,000 miles or more. And we've seen plenty of examples of cars getting past 200,000 or even 300,000 miles with still most of that battery capacity remaining with 80% battery or more.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another study from this Canadian fleet management company called Geotab, which has been studying this stuff for a while. And they've basically found that the annual degradation rate for batteries, that basically annually an EV battery is going to lose somewhere between 1-2% of its capacity each year, which is like not that much, right? Over 10 or 20 years, maybe it adds up, but not the kind of doomsday, like this EV is going to, you know, die on me sort of scenario that a lot of people are afraid of.
Yeah, and way better than like the battery degradation in your cell phone too. Like that just kind of occurred to me that like I've never had an iPhone more than 5 years because the battery goes to hell. And we're talking about like far less energy loss on cars too, which is great. So let's take this a bit further, right? EVs are cheaper now in the used market because nobody knows how to value their battery health. There's like no industry standard for doing that. And also Tesla cut their prices and the whole market went down with them. But then you think about why do cars depreciate at all when the miles start getting racked up? It's because a gas car has hundreds of moving parts within the engine and the drivetrain, and they wear out over time and they need to be replaced or they need to be repaired. So if you take those away, what do you have? Like an EV is a battery on wheels, basically. You're looking at replacing brake pads and suspension parts, windshield wipers, things like that. Most of the maintenance I've done to my EV6 has been windshield wiper fluid and getting the tires rotated, which I need to do, actually. So if the car's body and interior bits are good, if it hasn't been in an accident, and you know the tires and the replaceable parts are in good condition, and somebody's taken care of a battery, does the mileage even matter? Like if a Tesla with, you know, 225,000 miles is basically performing the same as one with less than 20,000 miles, like maybe that's not a thing anymore long term.
Yeah, it seems like it almost matters less than it does in a gas car, right? Like you may still, if you buy a clapped out Model 3 that's like several years old, you might have to like replace some suspension components or whatever. You could still probably have costly repairs, but it's not going to be this like, oh my God, my battery is dead. I need to spend $15,000 or $20,000 replacing it. Right. All the data shows us that you're probably going to be fine.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. So I think keep this in mind as you're car shopping. Don't be scared off by a higher mileage EV, like by default. Like I would still very much do your homework here. Look at the Carfax, look at whether it's been an accident or something, like make sure it's not been beat to hell. Like I don't think I would personally want to buy like an ex rideshare driver car, like for like a New York taxi as an EV. Like I'm kind of good there. But you know, if it seems in good condition, the miles are good, like it's not that big an issue. And there are ways to know your battery health too. I know that Tesla has like a test mode built into the car itself that'll tell you like what the battery life is like. There's a company called Recurrent that monitors battery health. I promise they're not a sponsor, but we use their data a lot. They're good folks. But they look up your mileage versus like what model of car you're driving. And they'll tell you like, based on that data, like your car probably has this percentage of battery left. And that's a really useful tool to have too. So you can look that up. So there's all these things that you could do to figure out if the battery is still good. But if you do your homework, you know, maybe high mileage on an electric car isn't so bad. Like, would you buy one with over 100,000 miles?
It's funny. It's like one of those things that, like, intellectually I know, and we've been talking about how it's not a problem. I think it still would give me, like, a little bit of pause. But, no, I think I agree with you. Like, I would make sure it wasn't a beat to hell. And maybe, like, I think if it's a modern one, I would stress that, like, we're not talking about old Nissan Leafs, right?
Right.
That might be an issue. If you're talking about...
Like Kevin Williams on our staff, he had a Mitsubishi iMiEV, RIP, I think it was a 2011 or 2012. Like, that battery just, like, was dead, and it's not really designed to be replaced in that car, so he had to sell it. But newer stuff, that's a different animal.
Yeah. I think if you're talking about a newer car, especially, like, a Tesla... All the data is piling up showing that you're probably going to be fine as long as it's not like throwing any, you know, error codes at you. What about you? You said one, would you buy an EV with over 100,000 miles? And two, you said you're shopping to replace the Mazda. What are you actually considering?
Like, would I do it? I don't know if you should ask me, because I once bought an early 1980s BMW 7 Series that had so many problems, like, I almost got divorced over it, which I would have deserved. So like my car buying advice is usually awful. There's what I tell people to do, and then there's like what I do myself, which are two very, very different things. But no, I think if the battery was good, I would not be scared off. I don't know if I could pull this off. I'd love to swap the Mazda for a Hyundai Ioniq 6, which is a car that I've always loved. I'll admit, like a Model 3 for bargain basement prices is very tempting. There's something of a moral conundrum involved with that. I'm still sort of working through. A Boltzall is a great proposition. I deal with some bad cold here in New York, so I'm not sure about the Bolt's range in the winter, but that there are some good options in this space too. I mean, like I've looked around, I've seen some Mach-Es in the 20,000 range. Like that's a solid pick too. So look around. I think if you're in the market for one of these things, you'll be surprised what you find.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
All right, now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world. Tim, who you got for me this week?
I have a plus this week after a week of kind of a lot of negative news. My plus is Lucid Motors, the EV startup. They just broke a Guinness World Record for the longest drive on a single charge in an EV. An Air Grand Touring did 749 miles on a charge driving through Europe, which is huge. I mean, we talk about 300 miles of range, 400 miles of range being good in an EV. Clearly, in some cars, mainly Lucids, you can get way more than that, especially if you're not driving at 80 miles an hour the whole time. Like this is a mix of city and other types of driving.
Yeah, they didn't release, at least from what I saw, the speeds they were going for that test. No. But I'm going to go ahead and assume that they were doing Autobahn speeds in the air, which you can absolutely do. But that's an insane result. Like that thing is that's a monster, that car. It's so good at that, you know? Yeah. I also have a plus this week. Look at us being positive. My plus is the Volkswagen Group. And I meant to mention this earlier when we were talking about Rivian and, RJ saying Legacy Auto has its issues here. But, that this is one company, the Volkswagen Group, that's actually investing multi-billions of dollars into Rivian for their new software and technology partnership for their future EVs. So, a lot of them seem to get it more than others. And I got my hat's off to VW Group, the original pivot to EVs car company that had a lot of problems with that. It's actually doing really well right now, and it's kind of taking Tesla's lunch money in Europe. It has a 46% market share for EVs in Germany, which is the biggest car market in Europe by far. Tesla's now in eighth place, by the way. And also, wow. That's how much they have declined. And VW also says that they have seen growth of 90% for EVs in Europe. That one in five vehicles they delivered in Western Europe in the first half this year was purely electric. So, America's slowing down on this stuff. We know China isn't, but neither are the Europeans. And Volkswagen is really cool because it makes, for EVs, it makes small, affordable city cars, and it makes the really high-end luxury stuff too. So I think all the brands it has and the choices it offers are paying off here. And to celebrate this landmark achievement, I think they should give everybody on this podcast a Taycan. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
We should do it.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't threaten me with a good time, All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to hit the follow button wherever you get your podcasts and send us your questions about the EV world to podcast@insideevs.com. See you next time.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.